This episode is supported by Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I just randomly, Vinny was having a toe skin irritation issue, and he ended up having this like skin that was really irritating him, and it was getting kind of like icky, and you know, like when kids start to get like little scabs and scratches and then they want to pick at it, and it was getting worse. And so Active Skin Repair showed up on my doorstep as a result of the sponsorship, and I got to put it to use immediately. And I got the ointment formula, or the like ointment formulation, and then also the spray, and the spray was perfect. So Vinny does not like ointmenty, creamy, lotiony things on his body, but I was able to get out the spray, literally took it out of the packaging the day it arrived, put it on his toe before he went to bed. And the next morning he was like, "Mom, my toe's all better." It was literally like this super amazing cure that helped his toes so quickly. So you can use Active Skin Repair on a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, other types of skin damage. It's totally safe, non-toxic, suitable on all types of skin, even parts of the body where you might have rosacea or eczema or have acne-prone skin. This is also safe for the youngest members of your family up to the oldest. So now you have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and super safe and clean ingredients, Active Skin Repair is something that you want to have on hand for your family. So to get your own Active Skin Repair, go to activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code SHAMELESS. That's activeskinrepair.com. Use the code SHAMELESS for 20% off your order. activeskinrepair.com, code SHAMELESS. This is the Shameless Mom Academy, episode 378 with Tori Henderson. Show notes for this episode, including any links mentioned in the episode, as well as any discount codes from our sponsors, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 378. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean. I'm here to give you and other passionate, driven, unapologetic moms tools, resources, and a little bit of humor to help you lead more positive, powerful, and purposeful lives every damn day. One of the best things about the Shameless Mom Academy is our community, so be sure to join us in our free private Facebook group to connect with other shameless moms just like you. You can find us over at shamelessmom.com/Facebook. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Tori Henderson is a shameless mom of two teens, a master certified life coach, a public school teacher, and the creator of lifecoachingforparents.com. She's helped hundreds of overworked and exhausted supermoms transform their parenting, their careers, and their lives. Tori is the host of the podcast Supermom is Getting Tired and is devoted to helping moms release the burdens and the guilt so they can truly enjoy this time of their lives. Listen in to hear Tori share the connection between helicopter parenting and fear, noticing our feelings versus judging them and feeling guilt around our situations, how we can disconnect our identity from our children's successes, struggles, and failures, and recover from enmeshment with our kids, why we must let our children experience negative emotions. I know it's really hard. This is a struggle for me. As well as how to stop overparenting and do less for your children, especially teens. I love this conversation with Tori. I was recently on her show, so make sure you go check out her show, Supermom is Getting Tired. You can listen to that episode, that interview with me, and then make sure you listen to this episode and you'll get like a massive dose of Tori and Sarah. Lots of fun, lots of energy, and really great insights from two different conversations, but just I think a ton to learn from both and some fun in between for sure. We had some good laughs in these conversations. So with all that said, I'm so excited to have you join me for this conversation with Tori Henderson. Tori Henderson, welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This is going to be fun. We're going to have a lot to talk about. I just told you that I have been wearing my mommy superhero cape like loud and proud this week and feeling like I'm not fully owning it. So we'll just get to immediately dive into like what motherhood really looks like when supermom is getting tired and supermom is not feeling like she's doing her best work.
Right. Well, I call it super moms, but a lot of my clients would not call themselves super moms. They're like, "Oh, I hope I am. I wish I was." And very often the way I define super mom is that it's like moms who go all in and like devote themselves so much and want so much to do the right thing that then they get exhausted and lost and overwhelmed from trying so hard and trying to, you know, I'm going to say perfectionistic parenting, you know, is like that there's a right way and a wrong way and I want to do it right. But it's like, I want to do everything right. And so that's kind of how I define supermom. And when, and I think there's a time and a place to put on your supermom cape. Like this might be your week to like just suck it up and get it done and just power through. But then the clients that I work with are moms who forget to hang up their cape, you know, and they just like, they don't know what it feels like to just take it off once in a while. And they just beat themselves up for not being super every moment of every day.
Right. And it's so interesting. I think as women, we are just, and I won't speak for all women, but I'll speak for myself and many people that I know, that it's not only the supermom cape, but it's all the other roles that happen in conjunction with that.
Yeah.
So it's household manager and business owner or employee or sister or daughter, or it's like all the capes and all the roles. And I know for me specifically this week, and we're recording this at the end of summer, it's been kind of a combination of all those roles and feeling like I can often put on one cape at a time. But then when you have a week where you're like, oh, wait, I need 13 capes on at once. This feels like a lot. And I think that we tend to do that. We put on more and more capes for all these different roles in our life without asking for support or for help and letting people see that we really don't have the capacity to put on another cape this week.
Yeah. And we don't even know we need help. Like we're just so caught up in like, I got to get things done. Yep. And it's, you know, we just go. And just like, I had a client say like, I feel like a slave to my to-do list, you know, where like the to-do list is dragging us through our days and stuff. So it can really take a hold and we don't even realize that until, you know, kind of like all of a sudden we kind of wake up like, gosh, I'm not really like enjoying my life. Or like, I feel, or like somebody asks you a question and like, what do you want? And you're like, I don't know the answer to that. You know? And so sometimes it kind of catches up with us too late. We just think we're being a good mom and taking care of business. And we don't realize that we're just exhausting ourselves because we haven't taken a chance to like step out of the weeds and go like, am I really like fully engaged in the moments of my life and doing what I want to be doing?
Exactly. So let's back up a little bit. Tell us your current kid situation and a little bit about your journey in motherhood and maybe specifically around like expectations versus reality. That's always a fun place to start.
So I am currently living with two teenagers, which is an adventure in itself. And for me, it started because like I was a teacher. I read parenting books for fun. Like I've always been obsessed with child development and human development and what's appropriate and normal. Like I just loved kids. And my background was I taught sex education for parents and kids to take together. So I taught these classes where it was like, you know, helping parents kind of overcome their own obstacles and like talk about uncomfortable subjects. So I thought when I became a mom, I would be like, this would be easy for me. This was the natural progression. I babysat. I did it. You know, I did yard duty. I did everything you can think of to prepare myself for parenting. And then my first son is born and it's like, oh my gosh. Like I went straight into the land of crazy, as I call it. And like,
I have to interject for a second because I had a similar, so I worked at a psychiatric hospital for 7 years in my like two careers ago, but I always thought like, obviously I'm going to be an amazing parent because, and I also went through school to become a teacher, which I never ended up doing that because I worked at the hospital instead, but I entered parenting thinking like, well, I mean, I already have all the tools, so we're good. And then my child was born. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I don't have any of the tools.
I was like, for me, it was, I don't have any instincts. Like I just kept devouring information, like thinking there because, it, you know, and I now can look back and say like, I was very perfectionistic. I wanted to do it right. If I was going to do anything in my life, right, it was going to be parenting, but there was no right or wrong. And you read one parenting book and it would contradict the other parenting book. And it was like, I didn't know how to listen to my own inner wisdom. And so I just was like scrambling, just like working hard, constantly trying to figure out how to do everything right. And of course, my definition of what does a good mom do was, you know, she's holds her baby every second of every day, and she never lets him cry, and her house is perfectly clean, and she's always healthy meals. And it was like very, you know, extreme perfectionism.
Right,
so
right.
Of course, I got exhausted, lost, overwhelmed. So of course, I am my own first client. I work with people that are, you know, kind of find themselves in situations like me where it's like, we want to do the right thing, but there isn't the answers out there. And, you know, we wear ourselves out in the process because we don't know how to like trust our gut or listen to our instincts or just feel okay when there is imperfection around you. Because, of course, my kid was not a perfect baby, and he cried all the time, and he had, you know, sensory motor integration, and he was sensitive to sounds and all this stuff. And I'm just like, okay, I'm not doing a good job as a mom.
Yeah.
And my solution for feeling insecure was to work harder.
Oh, I'm like thinking right now, everyone's like, oh, shoot, that's what I do. I think that's such a common solution. Rather than we ignore our gut and to the point that we can't identify what our gut is ever telling us. I think that just women in general do that. And then we just tell ourselves we need to work harder all the time. Yeah. And what an amazing recipe for like anxiety and depression and marital distress.
Yes. And what I think what bothers me is when people talk about like helicopter parenting, right? Like this is such a derogatory term. And yet, you know, we're all helicopter parents because that's our culture. Yeah. But it's not that we're domineering. It's that we're scared. We're scared of being a bad mom. And so we're trying to do it right. And we deserve compassion, not judgment. So that term really kind of bothers me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate that perspective. So where do you see moms needing, and I guess I'm going to back up and share that when my son was really little, I didn't know where I needed support because it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And I remember having this conversation with my husband when he was really little. And when my son was really little, my husband said, I want to help you, but you need to tell me what you need. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what I need. So I just said, well, I need you to just ask me every day what I need. And it's going to maybe be different every day, but I need you to just ask me like every single day forever. Because I just didn't know. And so I'm curious where you see moms needing the most support, and how can we start to even identify, like, clue into our gut instincts again? Because I really think that I think women are trained to ignore our instincts in order to be of service to others. And that's not in our best interest.
And I love what, you know, you said you're your husband. I think that's brilliant. And if you have a supportive husband who's willing to like catch you in the act and be like, okay, you need to step away from the children. Like, go for a walk. Like, leave the house. I got this. Like, so that can be really helpful. Another thing I've had my clients do that I learned, of course, firsthand was I would think about, like, what is it I would love to hear my husband say to me? And then I would write it on a little 3x5 card and hand it to him when he walked in the door.
Oh.
My favorite was, because he actually said this on his own. I was like, oh my God, that's the perfect thing that I needed to hear. So I didn't know it until he said it. But then I started writing it, and I would have him write, I don't know how you do it. I couldn't do what you do all day long. Mm. I'm just like, oh, my whole body just softened and relaxed. Like, that's what I needed to hear. But the other thing is that I want parents to know is that your negative emotions are coming from your higher self. You know, a lot of times we feel crappy, we feel lost, we feel tired, we get frustrated and annoyed and irritated. And instead of just recognizing like, hey, this is a sign that I'm out of balance, this is a sign that something's going on inside my head that's not helpful, instead we just go to guilt. We're like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Why can't I be a better parent? Why do I keep yelling at my kids? Why am I so frustrated? Like, we ask ourselves some really bad questions.
That's so true. And the questions that we would never ask other people. Like, if a girlfriend came to us to say they were struggling with something, we would never be like, well, why can't you just do better? Try harder, you know, like buck up.
Or like, what's wrong with you? Why are you frustrated about your children?
Right.
Never say that. Instead of saying like, okay, I notice that I'm feeling tired. I notice I'm feeling, you know, lost, overwhelmed. Let's pay attention to that and figure out why, and trust that that's coming from a higher place and it's leading us somewhere. When we go to guilt, it moves us to inaction. So the first step is to get rid of the guilt, because that's a waste of time, energy, spirit, and it's keeping you from actually making beneficial changes, in my opinion.
That makes a ton of sense. I talk a lot about data collection. And so being a data collector where you are notice, and that's along your lines of noticing. So noticing something and being like, oh, this didn't work well at all. Or I really don't like this about, you know, our nap time routine or our dinner routine or whatever the thing is. And then collecting the data, like every time, you know, A plus B equals C, rather than why can't I ever get it right? Why does everyone else do it better than me? Like all these other things that are judgment laden.
Exactly.
Just collecting the data.
Curious.
Yes.
Be neutral and scientific about it. Don't be judgmental and
Yes.
This episode is supported by Nutrafol. Did you know that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women? If you're among them, you are not alone. Thinning hair is normal, but it's not openly talked about, so it can feel lonely and frustrating and sometimes even embarrassing when you're going through it yourself. Join the over 1 million people who are doing something about their thinning hair with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Oh my gosh, I am a heavy shedder. So if you are a heavy shedder, or if you are someone who's wanting to thicken your hair, I definitely want you to try out Nutrafol. I have loved using it myself, and I know multiple other people who've used it and have found great results. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. To get started, you can take their hair quiz on Nutrafol.com, which will give you a personalized health plan based on your special root causes. Nutrafol is committed to helping you identify root causes of any shedding or hair loss so that you can really start to rebuild healthy hair in a way that is customized to you. So take the first steps to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code SHAMELESS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Go to Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code SHAMELESS. Nutrafol.com, code SHAMELESS. This episode is supported by a podcast I want to share with you called Understood Explains. So this show is about navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences, which can be so confusing. And so every season of the show is around a different theme. So there's a season on special education, there's a season on ADHD diagnosis for adults, and the current season is all about IEPs. I love this podcast because the episodes are 10 to 15 minutes long. So if you are short on time or short on focus, you can take this content in super quickly, easily. It's very digestible. And the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert, Juliana Urtube. So Juliana talks all about how to navigate educational plans, IEPs. She talks about the differences between IEPs and 504 plans. She really breaks things down in a really clear and simple way so that you have some of those questions that you might be thinking around, like, does this pertain to my child? Is this something I need to be looking into? Like, where do we go from here? Where do I go if I have questions? Juliana has you covered. She explains so many different things and so many different little pieces and nuance of IEPs and special education and different things on Understood Explains. So I want you to go check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can go listen to Understood Explains. Just go into your podcast app, do a search for Understood Explains, and it will pop right up. Click on it, pick your episode, and get the answers that you've been looking for and the support that you need around different learning differences and differences in school. So let's talk about thriving in motherhood. How can we thrive more? I mean, we've talked about a few things already, but where do you see opportunities for moms to thrive, and what are specific action steps that we can take?
I believe that, you know, we all are planted with certain inclinations, certain interests, certain proclivities. And our job as humans is to figure out what those things are and then pursue them. And what's exciting is that, like, as we do this, as we pay attention to what lights me up, what seems like fun, what feels delicious to me, when we pay attention to that stuff and we honor and respect it, we model for our kids how to do the same. Mm. So, like, I can't even relate to, like, well, I'll have conversations with my, I got, you know, teenagers. So they're talking about college. What should I major in? Where should I go to college? And it's like, oh my gosh, to me, it's like so obvious because I've learned myself and I've practiced it and I've taught my children how to listen to those signs. You know, and so a lot of times we think we just have this like invisible rule book of like, this is what a good mom would do. And our moms wrote in it, culture writes in it, commercials and advertising and Pinterest have written in it, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, this is what it looks like to be a good mom. And we're sold on it. We're like, this must be it. So that I'm going to get up every day and I'm going to do this. And my house is going to be immaculate and it's going to, you know, look like a designer home. And my kids will be well behaved and clean and organized and they'll eat healthy and they'll get good grades. And they'll, you know, as they go into adolescence, you know, very often, well, this, what happens is like our, when kids are little, we're like, okay, they really are so super cute and sweet and lovely and they have friends and they're clean and they smell nice. So I must be doing a good job as a mom.
Totally.
And then they get into puberty and it's like, oh, they don't smell good anymore. They don't look good anymore.
Oh my gosh, yes. And how is this a reflection on me?
Their friendships are drama laden. Their grades are in the toilet. They're stressed out. They're insecure. I get so many parents like, what do I do? My 13-year-old isn't very confident. I'm like, really? 13? Like, nobody's confident at 13, right. But we see it as a problem because that we need to solve so that we can think that we're a good mom.
Yeah.
We can feel confident in ourselves. And so rather than like putting our ability to think we're a good mom into the hands of our children, we've got to say like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to me and what lights me up and what are my interests and how can I, you know, follow them and pursue them while raising children and know that they're watching every move I make and watching me go after my dreams and, you know, do hard things and do things I'm scared and like put up with my own embarrassment. I mean, the first time I told somebody I wanted to be a life coach, I started crying. Like, I was like, I think I kind of sort of want to be a life coach.
Don't tell anybody. This is so embarrassing.
I'm like, so, like, why am I crying? It was like, it's scary. And yeah. So, you know, if you want your 13-year-old to say, like, I think I kind of sort of want to go out for the lead in the school play, like, that's scary stuff,
yeah,
to stand out amongst your peers.
Totally.
But the way that they get the confidence is I see from watching, you know, mom overcome her fears and, yeah, and follow her passions. Not that they have to be the same, right? That you're just following your passions.
Right. So how do we disconnect our identity from our kids' success or failures or our kids' identity? So, and I would put this in the context of not that we don't want to feel proud if our kids are doing great things, but if our kids are struggling or, and I mean, that could mean in an academic sense, it could mean in a social sense, it could be like, they're just gross and stinky and we're horrified to be around them in front of other people. Like, how can we disconnect ourselves from that? Cause we definitely internalize that. And I'll use an example that from just recently I talked about on Instagram. My son to this point has been comfortable with me picking out his clothes and shoes and what have you. And he started to get a little more picky. And then the other day I went to get him shoes for back to school and I was just going to get him like some super cool Vans. And he wanted these hideous light up Skechers. And I was like, I don't want other parents to see him in those. Like, and I knew as soon as I had the thought, I was like, that's so dumb. But I was like, no, like I want my kid to be the kid with the cool Vans.
Yeah. Oh, it's so
hard. It starts so young. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I'm like even having these thoughts when he's six, what is it going to be like when he's 16 and he decides to grow out his hair and doesn't take a shower for 4 days and making all sorts of decisions that I'm not in love with?
Wait till they like just stop brushing their teeth at age 13. And you're like a month later, you're like, your teeth are yellow. It's like, we went over that when you were two.
Right.
It is definitely, it's so interesting. I mean, I think awareness is obviously like so important, but it's like, I remember watching my son play volleyball. He was like 14, he's a freshman and he's serving and he's just missing every single, so I guess not every single serve, but he kept missing because you don't serve in a row. But like I felt embarrassed when he would miss the serve. And I'm like, why am I embarrassed?
Right.
You know, like, it's not me. He's not embarrassed at all. He's like an athlete. He understands the game is you got to fail if you're going to succeed. And I'm just sitting on the sidelines going, oh, he's letting down the team, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, my gosh, Tori, like, we've got to let this go.
Right. But I think that's probably really common. Totally. I think that's probably super common. I actually was listening to some other women who podcast two moms, and they were talking about one of the daughters in basketball never passes the ball. And so then she feels like, oh, all the parents are going to hate my kid because my daughter is hogging the ball and not giving the other kids playtime. And so she was like the same thing where you're like, oh my God, is everyone going to hate me or hate my kid? Like, it's just this whole weird emotional thing. And when you look at it from the outside, you're like, that's ridiculous. But when you're in it, it feels super uncomfortable.
Oh, no. And it, you're right. It's from the time they're really little, you know, when they got their finger up their nose, you're like embarrassed.
Yes, totally.
To what they're wearing, to what they say to their friends. You're just like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. Or, right. You know, say to grandma or whatever. Right. Like, what, it's just the way they behave, whatever. We just, embarrassment just right. kind of like comes with it. And so it's a sign that your identity is enmeshed, right? That you're over-identifying with your child.
Yes, such a and good term.
One of the signs that, like, it's time to, you know, really work on this, step it up, because you can kind of, it's your own, you know, well, we'll get there. One of the signs is when your kid starts pushing back and it's like, leave me alone. Like, usually, you know, 13, 14, they're kind of like, okay, mom, you know, your work here is done. Bye-bye.
Right.
And then you really got to separate, because those years, 13, 14, is where we see so much of, like, kids are embarrassed of their parents, right? And parents are embarrassed of their kids.
The kids don't realize it goes both ways.
Like, they're embarrassed with us too. Like, they're like, my daughter's like, mom, you are not wearing that out in public, you know? Right? So, like, she's judging me because she sees me as a reflection on her.
Right.
So you can really see it at those ages, but it certainly starts when they're younger too, you know? And so what I do with my clients is I have them ask, like, okay, imagine. So here's a big common one. Is your child is playing video games for, you know, 6 straight hours. I don't know, right? Your daughter's just scrolling on her phone, laying on the couch for like hours on end. That, we don't see that as anything positive, right? In our brains, we're like, that's not a good thing to be doing. And the reason it bothers us, whether they're missing a serve in volleyball or because they're, you know, wearing goofy outfits or because they're just playing too many video games or they're not getting good grades or whatever it is, the reason we feel embarrassed is because we are making that mean that I'm not doing my job as a mom.
Right.
So it's always comes back to us. Like, if I was a good mom, I would teach him not to pick his nose. You know, a good mom would have a son who doesn't miss, you know, the goals in soccer. Like, it's just silly. But, like, we think that, oh, there's more I have to do. I've got to put on my cape and I've got to work. And now I need to teach my kid how to be respectful to authority or whatever. It's like, and not to say, sometimes there is a point of intervention. But it's when we feel embarrassed that we are taking it on and making it mean something about us,
right?
And something negative, something we're ashamed of. It's you know, shame is like a doozy of an emotion. Nobody likes feeling shame. Right. So whenever we feel shame or embarrassment, we avoid it. And so rather than feeling embarrassed, we try to get our kids to change. You need to get off your phone. You need to stop playing video games. You need to wear better outfits. We kind of get mad. So when you notice yourself kind of like, I used to do this when I was like late. Like, I'd be driving in the car, my little ones in the back watching every move, of course. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I was late. I'm so stupid. I should have gone the other way. Like, what's wrong with me? And so when I get into that mode where I'm just like snappy and aggravated and frustrated, I'm trying not to feel embarrassed.
Right.
I'm avoiding the emotion of shame because I think that I'm a bad, mean person for showing up late to something.
Right.
And so it's always kind of that own inner talk that we have that's, you know, keeps us. I mean, so we snap at our kids, but it's really because we're trying to avoid a negative emotion because we think I'm not doing my job as a parent, or now there's just more I have to do.
And it really goes back to noticing, I mean, what we talked about in the beginning, noticing our feelings, collecting that data and being like, oh, I'm noticing that I'm feeling horrified by my child's behavior or appearance or what have you right now. And so I need to like spend a minute thinking about this and get collecting the data rather than judging, feeling guilty, et cetera, feeling shame, to look at really what this means versus like, does this make me a bad person?
Right. Like, what am I making it mean about me
right.
that my child didn't make the team, that my child got a bad grade? Right. What am I making it mean about me? And there's always some element in there of you know, there's more I have to do because, you know, we're already overworked. So right. We really don't want more. And that's a big one when we see our kids like being lazy. You know, we see them laying around on their phones. We're like, if they would just stress out, then I could relax. That's what I'm saying.
Totally.
And it's like, we can't stand to see them relax because we don't allow ourselves to be relaxed.
Oh my gosh. That's
like, if we're sitting on the couch scrolling on our phone for 2 hours, we would be beating ourselves to a pulp.
Right. Right.
But we can't allow them to do it.
Oh, such a good point. I'm totally thinking about, like, I'm going to like have to hold on to that until Vinny's a teenager, because I know I'm going to be really annoyed with him when he's just around just looking relaxed all the time when I'm not.
Yes. It is so crazy. It's kind of like, you know, when you're running late and you're like, come on, kids, we got to go. Hurry up. We're going to be late. Get in the car. And your kid's like dragging their heels.
This is my morning every single day.
And it drives us crazy.
Right.
We're just like, oh my God. And even if they just like started running around frantically, it makes us feel better. We're like, okay, phew, your stance.
Right. That's so funny. Yeah. Cause I always, I'm like, I don't want to be the parent that's always saying, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. But so I'm trying to find like different ways. And I also don't want him to think that I'm always running late, even though I often am 5 minutes late. So I'm always trying to be like covert about my tactics around like managing the chaos of, we need to make up 5 minutes of time in this walk that is at least a 10-minute walk. And how are we going to do that?
Or we could just let ourselves be late.
Right. Yes. Or we could. So when Vinny was in preschool, the preschool was across the street from our house, and we were the last family to arrive every single day in a preschool of like probably, I don't know, 50 kids or something. We were the last ones because
what do you make that mean about you?
Well, I finally just started embracing it. I was like, and the thing is, we had to be there at 9. It wasn't like we were getting up at 8:45. Like, I was getting up at 6 a.m. We had a whole entire day before we got over there, yet we still could not get there at 9 o'clock. We were always there at 9:05.
Wow.
And so I just finally was like, it's because we have so many things to accomplish before we get to school. And Vinny didn't care. And it was preschool. Like, it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Do you want a quick tip to
get
out the door faster? So very often what happens is they're in their own world, right? We're trying to bring them into our world. It's like, come on, we got to go to school. You know, school starts at 9. We got to walk, blah, 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 let's go. If you enter their world, it's so much easier to get them out the door. So let's say they're like playing with some toy, you know, like little people or something, or little, I don't know, bionicles. You move into their world and be like, oh, hello, what's your name? I like to do this. Hey, let's fly in the air. And we just kind of fly through the air. Then we fly out the door and into the car or whatever. And you just move so they can stay in their world. You just bring their world where you want it to go. And it's so much faster.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so that means I have to enter Lego world every morning. Harry Potter Lego land.
There you go. It works for little kids, right? When they're in that imagination. Because that's usually why little kids have a hard time. They don't want to come into our world. Our world is stressful.
Yeah, not nearly as fun.
It's so pleasant.
So you touched on parents experiencing negative emotions a few minutes ago. And let's talk about kids experiencing negative emotions. This is a huge struggle, I think. And so I have an only child, and I don't know that that makes me unique in this way, but I feel like maybe because he's my only, I'm more conscious. I think I see his negative emotions more than if I had like four kids. He would probably have a lot of negative emotions I would miss, but because I see every single thing that he processes, I feel sometimes that I am particularly quick to leap in if I feel my child might be experiencing a negative emotion. And I recognize that that might be a massive disservice to him. So why is it important for our children to experience negative emotions?
Yeah, I think this is a page in this invisible How to Be a Good Mom book that I think we all have, that are somehow we picked up this idea from our culture that our kids are supposed to be happy all day, every day, right? From now until the end of time. Like, we really do want that. Like, we think that that's what we're supposed to create. That a happy kid means I'm doing my job. And, you know, we're wired biologically to react to a negative emotion. Because, you know, if a baby's crying, it could be a life or death situation.
Right.
And so it's okay that we react to it and we pay attention to it. That's part of our biology. But then when you see, you know, kind of what it's about, and it's not a life or death situation, you know, what I think is important is to help our kids have access to the full range of emotions. Mm. We always kind of wish that we could just pick and choose and be like, I want to feel happy, excited, and
grateful.
But I don't want to feel like embarrassed or ashamed or angry or disappointed or sad. Like, we don't get to pick and choose. You either have access to all your emotions or none of them. Mm-hmm. And so when our emotions are really big and strong and, you know, negative, we tend to push them on down. Push them underwater. We don't want to feel it. And so what that does is it distances us from our positive emotions as well. So the level of joy that you feel when you also allow yourself to feel sadness just goes right up. Like, it's, I mean, I know this firsthand because I was one of those people who pushed my emotions down and I, you know, just kind of stayed on the surface and I just didn't go there and I didn't look underneath the water. And as I started allowing myself, I learned how to process a feeling, how to feel a feeling. And it doesn't take long and it's not hard. And I started doing it like over and over again and like allowing myself to feel all these things I was scared to feel. Oh my gosh. Like, I would just be like, the level of relaxation I felt, the level of joy I felt was so exponential. That I feel like because I had that experience, it's easy for me to then recognize that my kids need that also. So it's so much of this is like experiencing it for yourself first and then recognizing, like, oh yeah, like allowing yourself to feel disappointed is so powerful because it's also then allowing you to feel joy. Right. Now there's a difference between expressing negative emotions for a long period of time versus feeling a feeling. Feeling a feeling, allowing yourself to feel a negative emotion takes 90 seconds. You could, you know, throw a temper tantrum for hours.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sure none of us have seen that ever happen, though.
So, you know, sometimes kids can kind of get stuck in their negative emotion and you don't need to let them stay stuck there. You can say like, oh yes, that's so disappointing. Like, I'm so sorry that, you know, happened. That must have been so hard. You got your feelings hurt. Oh yeah. And you're compassionate for like 90 seconds. Okay, I'm going to set the timer. And when the timer goes off, you're going to be done. You just set a boundary. It's weird how well it works. Yeah. They're like, okay.
That's super interesting. This episode is supported by AquaTrue. Having clean, safe water is the last thing you want to worry about. But unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants in their tap water. So that's why you got to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers have a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers, which is what we have, take no installation or plumbing, and they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they're specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, which can lead to potentially adverse health effects like cancer, endocrine system disruption, and liver toxicity, which is part of what makes AquaTrue so special, unique, and important in terms of how they are able to filter water. They also have water purifiers to fit every type of home. So like the installation-free countertop purifier that we have at our house to higher capacity under sink options. They even have Wi-Fi connected purifiers and mineral boost options. So I'm so excited about our new AquaTrue. And here's the thing. I swear it's like a gentle reminder to actually drink more water every time you walk into your kitchen. So we are drinking more water now and also more clean water. So more water that is more clean. It feels like a double win. I'm feeling pretty impressed with us. I feel like sink water, tap water becomes invisible at a certain point. And when I see the purifier on my counter, it's like many time a day reminder to like, keep drinking. So I want you to check out AquaTrue for yourself and for your family. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money back guarantee, and that makes it a great gift as well. Today, my listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter the code shameless at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the code shameless, shameless, aquatrue.com, code shameless. This episode is supported by EarnIn. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn now can be in your hands today with EarnIn. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period.
Super, super easy to use. You just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. So the app is free. You can leave a tip if you want. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. So here's the thing. Sometimes getting close to your next paycheck, next pay period, and you realize, oh gosh, like paycheck doesn't come until next Friday, but we have this event that we need to attend this weekend and we need money for it. Or we have to buy a gift for someone. Or, oh my gosh, like my kid tore through their shoes and now we have to buy new shoes this weekend and the money's not in the bank yet. So EarnIn can help you access the money you've already earned at work by giving you this little bit of money in advance. So make EarnIn part of your financial routine and join EarnIn's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about EarnIn, I think about financial stability and security, and it gives me a lot of peace of mind. So for our listeners, all you need to do is download EarnIn today. It's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, and you can download it in Google Play or the Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Shameless Mom under podcast when you sign up. So there'll be a little place where you can, where it says, what podcast did you hear about them on? Type in Shameless Mom under podcast. This helps to show support for our show and our advertisers. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank, and subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
So I want to go back when you talk about feeling, we can feel our positive emotions on a much greater level if we allow ourselves to experience our negative emotions. So I'm assuming you mean over like a larger context. So not just because I'm allowing myself to feel a deeply negative emotion right now, am I also going to simultaneously or shortly thereafter feel a positive emotion, but over time that we have a greater landscape or spectrum of it being able to access all emotions in different situations. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Like certainly, you know, like moments of happiness, then you have like, so I get a lot of clients who come to me and say, like, I should be enjoying this more. Like I have the life I wanted. I've got everything. I always, you know, I created the life I have. Why am I not enjoying it more?
Okay.
And so that's kind of where allowing yourself to feel all the, well, the couple things. One is allowing yourself to feel the full range of emotions right. will certainly help you increase that level of joy for something you're already, you know, happy about. But the other thing is that sometimes we have bought into this book of what's supposed to make us happy, mm-hmm. and we actually aren't listening to what really makes us happy and what we really want. Because when we think about what we really want, sometimes we have judgments around it. Yeah. You know, like I, one of the things I encourage my mommies to do, some of them, if they, a lot of times what they need the most is they need solitude to hear their own voice, right? So yeah. Kids stop asking parent, like nobody asks us, like, what do you want to do today, mom? And what do you feel like eating? And what do you want to wear? Like nobody's asking us what we want. Right. And so we stop asking ourselves. And we just get into this kind of robotic zombie mode of just going through the motions. And so what I think notice is a lot of my clients is the best way to recalibrate and tune back into that is to go be by yourself for a while.
Yes.
And to be alone so that you can hear your own voice. And so one of the homework assignments I assign my clients sometimes is to check into a hotel for 2 nights by themselves. If they get a very strong feeling for it, of course, it's not right for everybody. But some people are like, oh, my God, that would be heaven. Yes. I could never do that. Right?
I actually have an increasing number of people in my different communities who do this on a regular basis. And I think it is so brilliant.
It's heaven because you're alone for that whole day in between and you have to tune into yourself. Right. Yes. Like, and you can hear your own voice in your head of like, when am I hungry? Do I feel like eating? What do I feel like eating? What do I feel like doing? Right. And it's just like recalibrating and getting back in touch with that. It's really hard to kind of live your best life when you don't even know what you want. Right. So that for me is often like a really powerful first step for a mom who feels lost and overwhelmed is to go check into a hotel for 2 nights so you get that middle day in between and just listen again. But a lot of people have concerns about that, judgments about that. I had my client, like, I would die on the sword before I'd let myself have tan myself like that, you know? Like, what would people think? And just so much, like, that's not what a good mom would do.
That's so interesting. That's like surprising to me.
It's, you know, depends on what's written in their manual.
Yeah,
you know?
But yeah.
It's like, oh, I could never do that. Because a good mom would sacrifice herself for the kids. A good mom would, you know, prioritize their children's needs all the time over their own. So, and then we just kind of stay, you know, in this martyr. It's kind of this martyr role. Right. Like, I'm a good mom, but I'm suffering.
Right. Yeah. So do you think there's a cultural shift around what quote unquote a good mom does and giving moms the space and grace to have an identity outside of motherhood? Or do you think there is, because I think when someone enters into a community like mine that's called the Shameless Mom Academy, there's a little bit of a, you know, unspoken prerequisite that these are women who are ready to live a little, you know, more shamelessly and more unapologetically. And so I think I probably see people who are ready.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, they're ready to embrace this identity of like, I do not live and die by my children or my partner. And you might not be seeing that. So I'm curious, do you see that, like, you know, for the most part, women do feel like they should always prioritize family and marriage over their own needs? Or do you feel like it's shifting where there's more awareness around moms having an independent identity and putting their needs before their children's or family?
I think, yeah, I think you're seeing more of that cultural shift and I'm seeing the other end because they're just coming in. But I do see, like, I get a lot of moms who are breadwinners. Like, I live, you know, in the San Francisco Bay Area, in Silicon Valley. Like, I get a lot of moms who are, you know, very driven career women supporting the family as well. And so what happens, I think, is so when we are used to, like, kind of beating ourselves up for not being good enough, like, I should be more, I should be better. And so, you know, you're like in the career field, you're in school, you're like, okay, I do really well in school, I get good grades, I know how to be successful. And then you translate that to work and you're like, okay, I know how to be successful, this is great. And then you translate to motherhood and like, okay, the successful mom has these, you know, great kids, and they might have helpers, they might have house cleaners and nannies and stuff like that, but they're still in that kind of race to, like, be a really good mom and career woman and, you know, wife.
Yeah.
And then they start doing, like, life coaching, or they find your podcast and, like, oh, like, I should be living my best life. And then they start beating themselves up for not living their best life and feeling self-actualized and being like, I should be more shameless than I am, you know?
A whole new layer of guilt.
So
I'm guilty for not being shameless. I'm guilty for that.
We gotta watch out for that and like undo that original programming around, like, I'm not good enough as I am.
Yes, totally. That's such a great.
And that's where I think your podcast is doing a really good service of saying, like, wait a second. Like, there's lots of ways to be a good mom. It doesn't have to look a certain way. And it's, you know, more important about how I'm feeling and rather than, like, you know, doing everything right and perfect.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about overparenting and what does that mean? Where do you see it happening? And why is doing less a great parenting strategy?
So I can see it because I have teenagers. So, like, I'm surrounded by the overparenting when it comes to the teen years, especially. And it's really, like I said, it's more like fearful parenting. Mm. So what happens is, you know, moms, we get really invested in our kids. We love raising kids. We join the PTAs and we do in the carpools and we're doing all the sports and we're, like, super involved. And, you know, we have careers, but this can become like a social community for us. It can become part of identity, right? And we enjoy it. And we kind of, this is our role. And it feels good to be taking care of others and to be, you know, like, I don't know, part of a community. It feels really good. So what happens is then when they start getting older and into adolescence and they start saying, sorry, mom, you're done here. Your work here is done. I don't need you anymore. Is we get scared of kind of losing that identity, that community, that culture of like, oh, no, you want me at every soccer game. I'm pretty sure you do because I'm the snack mom and I bring the stuff and those are my friends. So, like, you know, I'm still going to go.
I'll just be right over here sitting here by myself while you pretend I'm not here.
Yeah, you know, it really, it's just, it's that has really changed culturally. Like, I remember in the 80s, like, watching, like, after school specials, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Like, these little, like, after school little movies. And they, would just, or maybe it's the 90s, but they'd be like, oh, he's a bad mom because he didn't show up to watch your baseball games. And, you know, like, oh, if I could have anything, I would want my, you know, dad to watch me play. And it was like this like social programming. And now, boy, did we take that hook, line, and sinker, and we're like super involved now.
Right, right.
So, yeah, so I think, you know, this can then translate into overparenting where it's like, oh, my kid needs me. And also this idea that they shouldn't experience negative emotions. So if they have a problem with a teacher, like, oh, I can step in and fix that. Like, that feels good to us.
Yeah.
I can solve his problems. Yeah, let me have it. I can email the teacher. No problem. We'll get this taken care of right away. I don't want you to have a negative emotion or negative experience. Mm-hmm. Mom's on it. You know, and so this kind of can keep translating through, you know, high school and into college even, and which is what, you know, we're seeing as kind of a trend where it's like the kids then become dependent on the parent to bail them out. They either push back and then, you know, that's hard for mommies because they have to let go, or they become dependent on it and they have trouble making their own decisions. They have trouble knowing, like, what should I major in? Do I want to smoke pot? I'm not sure. You know, and it's just they kind of wait to be rescued, and it feels good to us to rescue. So it can be a really tricky pattern to get stuck in.
Yeah.
But I just kind of like to remember that, you know, our goal is to raise an adult. And, you know, that really can make their own decisions. And sometimes, like, letting go, even if they're experiencing negative emotion or a negative experience, like, that's how they learn. That's how they – because right now, like, if we're kind of overparenting, they know mom is strong, mom is tough, mom is capable, mom is responsible, mom will get the job done. They don't know that they are strong, they are capable, they can be resilient, and they can get the job done.
Oh, so such that's an important clarification.
Yeah. So it feels good to us to do that, but letting go gives them the feel good feeling that we want them to have.
Right. So how do we know, how do we distinguish? And I say this as a parent who imagines myself to be as someone who will probably want to be a rescuer when my son is a teen. How do we distinguish between those times when we're like, I shall let him fight this battle, own this battle, versus like me stepping in. And I'm thinking around situations, you know, a disagreement with a teacher over a grade, or, you know, something around a you know, getting playing time on a basketball court, or things like that, where we decide when we need to step in and when we should encourage our kids to be their own self-advocates.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the answer is always, they, you know, let them be their own self-advocates, you know, like even if it's just encouraging them or helping role playing with them, giving them the words and the vocabulary to use, practicing, telling them like, oh, I trust you to work it out, you know, and then if they choose not to, that's their business. But to answer your first question, I think I remember how to know is I remember this one day, my daughter came home from school. She's like maybe first or second grade. And I'm in the kitchen with my older son, my mother-in-law, and myself. And my daughter's sitting there at the table doing her homework. She's like, I can't figure this out. I don't know what to do. This is lame. Whatever.
That would my son already says that. And he's
and
almost
all three of us are just like, must help Megan. Like, it was like this urgency and this like, I call it the helping tick, where it's just like this reaction of like, yes, I must help you now. And it was funny to see all, because I would do that normally. I'm like, oh, you need me? I'm here.
Right.
But my son had it and my mother-in-law. And so to see all three of us jumping in to help her,
gosh,
I was like, aha, this is about us, not
right,
about her.
Right.
This is not helping her. And so I think how to know is when you have that like impulse, that reaction where it's just like, oh, I can help you with this. Must jump in now. That speed and urgency is your sign that it's self-serving, not.
Oh, that's a really great tip. And also I'm like, shoot, because I'm a very reactive person. So this is going to be a struggle for me. But that's such a great tip though, because it really requires us to practice, again, to notice our responses and notice how quick we are to respond to things. I think that's really, really helpful.
And to be forgiving, like to know that, like, okay, this is my, you know, you have the helping tick, right? We can be compassionate towards people with ticks, right?
Right.
Like that's just how they react, and that's okay.
Totally.
And so that compassion, whenever we can offer ourselves compassion, like literally you can feel a softening of the muscles. Mm-hmm. When you offer yourself compassion, like, you know, your breathing slows down. And it's then it just becomes so much easier to be like, oh yeah, that's what I do. I tend to jump in and that's okay. And then it slows us down and we're not as likely to react. And it gives us that time to like think about like, how can I help, you know, encourage my child to like solve this problem? And you can say things like, you know, yeah, that's a doozy of a problem. How are you going to fix that?
Oh, I love it. That's not my instinct. I'm like so taking notes right now. Like, okay, remember when Vinny's 12?
Yeah, I do look at a lot of people like have like school-aged kids, you know, they're a little bit older. And so, but yes, yeah, the preschool years are also filled with, you know, just it's almost like different issues, you know?
Yeah, but it's also, it's really helpful to identify these patterns now. So if I know that I'm someone to help jump in and help him right now when he has like math fact worksheets to do, to recognize like, oh wait, I'm probably also going to be the parent like on a school project where the first moment he's faltering, I'll be like, let me help you, let's fix it together, I'm all in. And that, and like the, you said, that's not beneficial.
The way they show up as preschoolers is very often what you'll see in adolescents. So it is kind of that mirror. So if he's one who likes to be rescued, if he likes, you know, like some kids kind of like claim helplessness, like I can't do it, and they're like arms are flailing, they're not even trying, some kids that's kind of their MO. And so that combined with the parent with the helping tick,
so mine I think is gonna be more the perfectionist, that he doesn't want to do things he's not really good at. And so that's where I think that it's not even an asking for help thing as much as it's like, well, this is really hard and I hate it and I can't do it, so I'm not gonna do it, when it really is like stuff he can totally do.
Right.
And so then I want to jump in and like coach him through it and be like, you can do it. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And I believe in you. And then, which none of which he wants to hear.
Yeah. It's like, we just like, we read the whole growth mindset book. We're like,
totally.
We just want to like put it in their brains and be like, no, that's not how you're supposed to think about it.
Right.
So yeah, when you, it's hard, almost harder when you have all this knowledge and information and then you see your kid acting in a way you're like, wait, I can totally fix that in like, you know, give me 30 minutes of your time and you'll be done.
Yeah.
It makes it that much harder.
Right. Oh, this has been so fascinating, Tori. I feel like I just got a massive glimpse into my future. I'm so grateful. I've gotten like pre-therapy. But I know this has been really helpful for people listening with kids of a variety of ages, whether they're right in it right now with teenagers or they're, you know, at the beginning, earlier phases like I am. This has just been really amazing. So I want to know, before we wrap up, in what ways you're currently showing up as a shameless mom?
I think... by respecting, I think I want to say, by respecting that I really do want to do everything perfectly, that as much as I wish I didn't, like what I found really helps me the most is to be compassionate to that part of myself that's like, oh, I know you want to do everything perfectly and you want your kids to do everything perfectly and you want them to just be these happy, self-actualized people that move through the world with confidence and ease, and like, I get it, honey. Like, I just kind of talk to myself in a very kind voice and just kind of admit my, you know, hang-ups, I guess, with perfectionism, rather than saying I shouldn't be, you know, I shouldn't want to be perfectionistic. It's like, no, it's okay. I get it. You want to be perfect. And that's okay.
Yes. Noticing, always noticing. I love it. This has been fantastic, Tori. I'm so grateful for you, for your time and for your work. Tell our listeners where they can find you and connect with you.
So you can go to lifecoachingforparents.com. That's my website. You can get a free like discovery call if you need some help walking through any of these, you know, exciting, fun issues that show up for us. You can also listen to my podcast. It's called Super Mom is Getting Tired. And that's on iTunes.
I love the title of the show.
You relate to the title of the show.
Yes, totally, totally. Thank you for being here. This has been fantastic. I appreciate you and your work, Tori. And I appreciate you spending time with us today.
Well, thank you, Sarah. I appreciate you too. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining me in the Shameless Mom Academy today. I really, really appreciate you being here, and I hope you learned something new. As always, this conversation will be continued over in our free private Facebook group. You can join that group by going to shamelessmom.com/Facebook to connect with other shameless moms just like you. Additionally, if this is your first time listening to the show, know that we are here every Monday and Wednesday with a brand new episode. So make sure you subscribe. Go to whatever podcast app you use and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can do that directly if you go to shamelessmom.com/review. That will put you in Apple Podcasts, where you can click on the subscribe button, and you can also leave a review. If you scroll down a little bit, you can leave a 5-star review. You can write a few sentences letting me know what you thought about the show. If you let me know how the show has impacted you in becoming a more shameless mom, you might be nominated to be Shameless Mom of the Week. Also, please share this episode. My goal is to help more mamas be more shameless every damn day. So please do share this episode. You can take a screenshot of the episode on your phone and then share it out on social media. Tag me at the Shameless Mom Academy on Facebook or Instagram. I'm quick to reply and eager to send you Facebook love and love to be connected to all of you. So again, thank you for being here. I can't wait to be back here again with you in just a couple days. And until then, no matter what you do today, make sure you do it shamelessly.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear?
Gone.
Poof.
Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. Mm-hmm.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking